Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. It is the premiere of the CUSA Report podcast. I am your host, Adam Martinez, and welcome to the show. In the future, the plan is to have a few guests, some noted beat writers from around the league, but right now, let's just get to know each other. I am, as some of you know, the publisher of MeanGreenNation.com. And one thing I found when writing about North Texas was that I found myself caring and covering a lot of the rest of the league. And, you know, you see a lot of other leagues, mostly the P5 league, have, you know, like a league coverage, a league-wide focus. And our league needed a little bit of that. And there are a few guys that write, that do a bunch of blogging or some beat writer guys that have a good handle on league-wide issues, things, items. And there's a lot of fans that actually care about everybody else because it pertains to their team. You know, you want to know what Florida Atlantic's doing because you might be playing them in the conference championship game, for example. And there needed to be something covering that. And there's some league-wide coverage. I think The Athletic does G5 coverage. One issue I have with G5 coverage is that's a lot of teams. I mean, 14 teams in this league is a lot of teams. It's a lot of teams to cover. It's hard to get a handle on Louisiana Tech and Western Kentucky and Charlotte and UTSA and UTEP and Florida International. They're so far away, it's hard to see how one thing, one storyline ties them both. And then you add in like the MAC or the you know, Mountain West or something like that. It's too much to cover. And that is one issue I've had for a long time with the best of the rest kind of blogs. And I originally contributed to, Underdog Dynasty when it first began. And I made that point to the editors and the main editors at the time. I said, hey, there really needs to be Conference USA only coverage because very few people care about Charlotte and, say, Appalachian State or Arkansas State and Marshall. You know, it's already difficult to get the Eastern Conference USA teams to care a whole lot about the Western teams. And you're really not doing anybody any favors to mix in Navy coverage with Hawaii coverage and Old Dominion coverage. There's not a whole lot of overlap, and it could be a little bit more focused. So that was the genesis of Conference USA Report. And originally wanted to have a few other writers, and some things came along in their lives that prevented them from really contributing as often as they originally planned to. So right now, just me. The plan is to add more people, and we'll see how it goes. So far, it's been so good. We've got some good responses. I've been mentioning over and over on Twitter and elsewhere that I wanted to get a podcast going. But the best time to podcast is when there are things to talk about. And hey, week one just passed. And the best thing to talk about are the games. So let's get to it. The game of the week took place out in Norman. And oh, there's a studio out in Sankey Studio running. Okay. The game of the week took place out in Norman, and there was a certain segment of the fan base, I guess Conference USA fan base or watchers, that thought Florida Atlantic had a shot. Oklahoma certainly seemed vulnerable. They lost their Heisman Trophy winner. Yes, they had Kyler Murray, or they have Kyler Murray, and he's very good, but there's an adjustment period that comes with losing your, you know, multiple-year starting quarterback and adjusting to the new guy. That obviously didn't happen the way that I guess the more optimistic people thought it would happen. Florida Atlanta just basically got dominated. And one thing Mike Sanford said at Conference USA Media Days was that there's going to be an adjustment period. They lost both coordinators, Kendall Briles, and their defensive coordinator, Chris Kiffin. His Lane Kiffin's brother, he took a job with the 49ers, and so they hired Tony, what's his name, Tony Pecoraro from Southern Miss. And there's going to be an adjustment situation. And, I mean, there are two ways you can take this thing. You can say, well, Florida Atlantic is not who we thought they were. The league is wide open. Or you can say, you know, maybe that was just an early season blip against a very good Oklahoma team on the road in a tough situation. And hey, remember, Florida Atlantic struggled last season with Navy. They got blown out. They figured things out. And then they dominated the rest of the league. I lean towards the latter. I thought maybe they had a chance against Oklahoma. And if Chris Robinson, their new quarterback, could have completed some of those passes that he had available to complete. There was a couple complete overthrows and just awful missed targets there. Then the game is probably just a little bit different. I mean, football is very emotional and it's very momentum driven. One play gets everybody hyped up and can change the course of the game. This is documented. We've seen this every week. You know, we've seen football. We know it. Those things didn't happen early enough. Everything got away from them. And before you know it, it was, what, 24-0 in the first quarter? And Florida Atlantic knows that kind of feeling because they've been on the other side of that. They've destroyed teams, most notably North Texas in two games last season, where they get ahead, they put their foot on the throat, and they step down. They know the value in getting up early and big and taking the fight out of the other team. That's what Oklahoma did at Florida Atlantic. And there we have a loss. 63-14 was the final score, but it wasn't even that close. Florida Atlantic didn't score till late. They were the preseason Conference USA Report leader in the preseason power poll rankings we sent out to some beat writers. I mean, that poll doesn't mean anything. I think we all thought Florida Atlantic was the best team in the league, and they still are. North Texas, for all the they're showing yesterday against SMU, did get beat by a combined score of like 110-48 in two games and allowed 1,400 yards in two games. So until North Texas can show that they are better than Florida Atlantic on the field, Florida Atlantic's still the best team. And, you know, Florida Atlantic has still not lost to a Conference USA team. And they've still not lost to a G5 team. So, I mean, in what, 12 weeks or something like that. So, we'll pause. We won't overreact to Florida Atlantic losses. But that was a very bad loss still. Elsewhere, around the league, we spoke about North Texas. And they are, by a lot of folks' measure, the second best team in the league. Although, I would say, look out for Louisiana Tech. I think Louisiana Tech's pretty good. North Texas put on a show against SMU. One thing that we were concerned about regarding North Texas and Seth Littrell's team was that defense. Last year, they couldn't stop anybody. Florida Atlantic just dominated, ran through them, and then they threw all over them. SMU in the matchup last season, Cortland Sutton had four touchdowns in the first half. You could throw on North Texas. You could mostly run on them, although that was the strength of their defense, was the run game. A lot was made of the improvement over the offseason, but everybody took a wait-and-see approach, as they should have, because North Texas had yet to prove they could stop anybody. Now, here comes SMU with a three-year starting quarterback in Ben Hicks. He set a program record for touchdowns last season. And an offensive guru in Sonny Dykes, who, when he was at Louisiana Tech, set lots of offensive records there. They threw the ball a ton. They scored a lot of points. The thinking was, hey, this is going to be a shootout. This could be, a chance to really see the air raid on display in both versions of it, like an advanced older form and like the new hot version of it. What we saw was a defensive show by North Texas, which, yeah, that's college football for you. I think at one point, somewhere in the third quarter, SMU only had one first down, and the score was 36-0. For a good portion of this game, SMU had less than 100 yards. It wasn't until about 8 minutes in the fourth quarter that SMU scored some points, and then there were some breakdowns with the backups in there, and Ben Hicks ended up throwing for 250 total yards, and then they put up 23 points. But that was not the case. It was like 36-0 with 7 minutes, 59 seconds in the fourth quarter. The 46-23 final is not indicative of the beatdown that took place there. It's pretty incredible if North Texas could play at this level. And again, we're maybe presuming too much here. It was SMU, and last time we saw SMU, they were getting beat down much the same way at the hands of Louisiana Tech in the Frisco Bowl. So we won't crown North Texas anything just yet, but it was a good win. I think they set a program record, 29,519 in attendance, which I know some other Conference USA schools will scoff at, but program record for North Texas. Big win. Everybody's talking about him. Mason Fine, the reigning Conference USA Offensive Player of the Year, had 444 yards passing on 40 of 50 throwing. That's pretty incredible, 80% there, and three touchdowns. I believe he is the, and I'm looking at the numbers right now, he is right now the yards per game leader in the nation. The guy at Hawaii is like dominating right now. So he's also played two games. What is his name? McDonald? Cole McDonald? Yeah. He's thrown for 846, but he's averaging 423. Right now, your leader is Mason Fine, 444 yards per game. Followed by Will Greer, who also had himself a big game yesterday against Tennessee. But this is not a Big 12 podcast. So, big stuff happening in North Texas. They looked good. The running game didn't look too great. But coming into the season, we thought, okay, that offense is going to be explosive. If the defense could give them anything, they're going to be pretty good. And they can challenge for the conference title, perhaps repeat in the West, and definitely, you know, give Florida Atlantic a better game. As it is, the defense looked incredible. The offense, at least Mason Fine and his receiving core, looked pretty amazing. And so the rest of the division needs to look out, I suppose. Louisiana Tech, my pick, my personal pick for the, I don't want to say dark horse, because I think they're the betting favorites to be, to win the West. They escaped. 30-26 was the final. South Alabama drove late in the game. They tried to get an onside kick. But the concern is that Jamar Smith had three interceptions, although he played okay. He played decently. He had 209 yards passing, two touchdowns, but three interceptions. He was 19 of 29. The three interceptions are concerning. Thrown into coverage, bad passes. The thinking was that last season he was trying to get used to his new guys and that he would improve. But, you know, he didn't play well. Jaquiz Dancy did play well. 15 carries, 144 yards, two touchdowns. But a win is a win. That's what Skip Holt said in his post-game conversations. Thought the special teams played good, gave up a long return, and missed an extra point. We did a number of things. We have to clean up. A win is a win. Defensively, they played well. I believe they had two, three interceptions, a couple turnovers. There was a forced fumble somewhere in there. Amik Robinson, Darrell Lewis got an interception. There we go. Louisiana Tech, I still think, is one of the better teams because they're just good top to bottom, as well as North Texas played. Again, we don't know how good Southern Methodist is. So Louisiana Tech playing okay, competing against a decent South Alabama team. They're pretty good. We know they're okay. They're going to give a lot of teams trouble. That's good. We don't want to make too many proclamations here. It's not overreaction Monday yet. It's Sunday. Louisiana Tech is still in the win column. That was the kind of game that they perhaps would have lost last season. But you could also say, hey, an improvement would be not playing in these types of games. And whatever the case may be, they played one of the better opponents on the slate, the league slate this week. And they came out with a W. Southern Miss, 55-7 winners over Jackson State. We won't say too much about this because it's an FCS squad, and Southern Miss was expected to handle Jackson State. But Jack Abraham looked good, 21-27. I believe his passing numbers What's important is not so much the yards, but I think, what is it, 242 yards? That's reasonable, decent. He had four scores, but it's the completions. Last season, the two quarterbacks, Keon Howard, Quandre Diggs, were a little iffy on completions. I believe in the North Texas game for Southern Miss, Quandre Diggs completed less than 50% of his passing. That was an issue. That and turnovers. Those are issues for them last season. And to see Jack Abraham go out there and complete 21 of 27 is great. It's very good news for Southern Miss. They need people to step up. The run game wasn't great. I thought it was funny because Jay Hobson had told me, like, look, obviously getting tired of being asked about the departed Ito Smith. He's like, we feel good. We actually feel like we're deeper at running back. We should be pretty great. The run game wasn't really there. And especially against a team like Jackson State, you expect them to be able to run the ball. You expect the Eagles to be able to run the ball a lot better. They didn't. They threw the ball well. Quez Watkins is a player. He had four touchdowns, and I mean, he looked dangerous all over the field. That's going to be the new go-to guy in Hattiesburg, it looks like. What did he have? Eight receptions, 138 yards, three touchdowns. His longest 28, and then he had a punt return. The guy's talented. He's a threat to score. Yes, it was Jackson State, but there's a lot of other people that didn't score against FCS squads. I mean, look at Rice a couple weeks ago. Meanwhile, in Charlotte, there was a weather delay that kind of threw everybody off, but Chris Reynolds and Charlotte won 34 to 10. There's not much to say about this. I still think Brad Lambert's on the hot seat. I don't know if a win against Fordham is going to really change anybody's opinions about that program, but we'll see. A win is a win. They're 1-0, and that's good. We won't talk too much about that. 34 to 10. I think you'd like to see a bigger win against an FCS team like that. But, you know, you take what you can get. That's what Skip Holt said about his win, right? A win is a win. You take them where you can get them. Meanwhile, should we talk about the disaster that was the Liberty domination 52 to 10 win over Old Dominion? See, that Charlotte win looks a lot better when you compare it to the Old Dominion loss. 52 to 10, a destruction. Some of that was piled on late, but this is not the kind of thing that you expect from a very good question mark Old Dominion team that was supposed to be a lot better than last season. They had a returning starter at quarterback. They had a lot of guys back from injury. Everybody expected to be much better this season. Liberty, yes, they jumped up and beat Baylor last season, but Baylor was going through some things. This program, Old Dominion, the Monarchs, are not a program in disarray. Or are they? Well, they shouldn't be, and they shouldn't be losing 52 to 10. This was an awful loss, the awful loss of the week. And there's going to be a lot of hell to pay for it. And rightly so. Bobby Wilder said, "Confidence is shook right now in everybody, and that's my job as a head coach to get that back." Running back Jeremy Cox said that it was there was like three or four drives where we didn't convert on our field goals and we didn't score. You see the results. That's what happens when you didn't score. I'm guessing that they're saying that it was just kind of momentum. The offense looked bad. Steven Williams went 14 of 30 for 132 yards. I think as a team, they couldn't get any first downs. 3 of 16 on third down. Only 301 total yards. Things didn't look good. On top of all that, they're allowing Liberty to move the ball at will. 591 net yards for Liberty. Calvert, the quarterback, 25 of 36, 345 yards and four touchdowns. If I just gave you the box score and you took a look at it, you would think, okay, this is what we expected, right? FBS team rolls over on an FCS team late in the game. Good job, good effort. But you wouldn't expect the roles to be flipped like that. Bobby Wilder is a good coach. He's well liked across the league. He's well liked in that town in Norfolk. But I don't know how much job security you can have when you drop a game like this. That it just does not bode well for that program to be losing games like this. This coming off a season in which they underperformed by their standards, by their measure. I mean, I thought they were going to underperform a little bit just because they had a quarterback change, but they're two seasons off a 10-win season, right, and a bowl game victory. Everything looked up. They underperformed last season, again, by their own measure. And this season was going to be a return to form where they were going to compete somewhere in the middle. You know, probably Florida Atlantic's too good for them. I know Middle Tennessee's pretty decent. Marshall is a favorite in that conference, and FIU wants to do something. But it's not unreasonable to think that Old Dominion, given the right set of circumstances, could compete in that pack, pull off an upset, and you know, make a name for themselves. This is not a great start, because this was supposed to be a win. This was supposed to be an easy win on the way to get into a bowl again. Because you could say, well, they have Liberty next week, FIU in an early season conference game. Those would possibly be wins there. That's what the thinking was. Charlotte is very winnable. That was supposed to be three. Virginia Tech, that's a loss. East Carolina, that's a loss. At Florida Atlantic, that's probably a loss. Marshall at home, maybe, who knows? The Hilltoppers are not as good as they have been in years past. Middle Tennessee, again, kind of depends on how Kid Stock still is doing. North Texas at home, Old Dominion competed very well with North Texas in Apogee last season. The idea was they maybe get a win there. VMI and then Rice is a win. Losing to Liberty and then playing the way they did. I mean, all those maybes are definitely losses now, right? I can't see them competing with North Texas. They definitely can't score with them. And if that defense, the North Texas Mean Green defense, is improved, where are the points coming? Not good at Old Dominion. Meanwhile, looking good is a team that I haven't been super excited about is Marshall. I thought, hey, losing your coordinators and losing your starting quarterback is not good, even if Chase Litton probably wasn't performing as well as he should have last season, in my opinion. But they came out, they played well against Miami of Ohio. Isaiah Green, 272 yards, 24-37 passing, two touchdowns. A lot of people were excited about him in that performance. Marshall looked good. They looked really good. They allowed the scores looked closer than the game actually was. Miami scored late. Yardage was about the same. You'd expect maybe Marshall's defense to be a little bit better. But again, you look at that division. There's not a whole lot of offensive juggernauts. Maybe Middle Tennessee. Depending on how Stockstill is playing, but they didn't look good against Vanderbilt. Florida Atlantic, they still have talent, and at times you can see that that talent, Devin Singletary in particular, was able to compete against those, you know, 4- and 5-star athletes there at Oklahoma. But they look out of sorts, and, you know, we'll see. The story of this season, I think, based on all the predictions, is whether or not Marshall can stop Florida Atlantic and sneak an East Division title, we'll see. Right now, it looks like the Herd maybe have an offense and are working on that defense. Keon Davis played well, 17 attempts, 76 yards rushing. Marshall looks good. I think the biggest thing to take away from this is that Isaiah Green looks like a solid quarterback for them and one who's going to carry them. And I mean, college football is all about the quarterback, and it looks like they have a solid one, a decent one, and that's 90% of the game. He still is young, and so anything could happen, but I feel good about their situation right now at quarterback, and that was one of my big concerns there. It looks like the offense is moving the ball well. We'll see what happens with Marshall. I'm still a little bit more skeptical than everybody else. I think everybody has them just really high, and I don't see the rationale there. Next week they have Eastern Kentucky. That should be a win before they take on South Carolina at South Carolina in the money game. Then you got NC State. That's tough. And then the Hilltoppers and then the Blue Raiders and the Monarchs. And three straight sort of rivalry games. Before the big one in October against Florida Atlantic. It's a tough schedule for Marshall, and I don't see how they can squeeze out an easy bowl victory, bowl-eligible kind of wins here. It's not nothing easy. Maybe next week, that's when they'll have two. Where the next four come from? You got to think that the South Carolina, NC State are losses. Western Kentucky looks poor, so that's maybe a win. But that game is always up in the air. Middle Tennessee, that's at home, so that's good. Old Dominion maybe looks poor. Maybe you get a win into the season. Charlotte, UTSA, because UTSA looks pretty terrible in there. That's going to be in Huntington. So we'll see about Marshall. But things started out well for them, and that's good for the Eastern side. I think what top of the standings, Charlotte and Marshall. I was not expecting that. FIU lost to Indiana at home in a game that they were expected to lose, let's be honest. But we thought maybe this would be closer. Indiana kind of, you know, they had a lead, a bigger lead later. FIU didn't really play too well. That defense is supposed to be the strength. They're still looking for a quarterback, somebody to play replace Magoo. It's not there yet. They're supposed to be the story of the non-Lane Kiffin story of the East. And I believe in Butch Davis. I think he's a good coach. He's won everywhere that he's been. But you kind of hope they'd compete a little bit better with Indiana. Indiana is not a top-tier Big Ten team. They're very beatable. Even North Texas at a lower point in their rebuild, they beat Indiana at home. But James Morgan, 11 of 20, 90 yards. Was it Christian Alexander, 6 of 8, 67 yards. Still trying to figure out the quarterback over there. Running game, Anthony Jones, 15 carries, 88 yards. Nothing amazing. Nothing amazing there. Indiana had 465 total yards, 5.7 yards per play, and they were able to run the ball. And we were really expecting that Florida International defense, the defensive line especially, to be more stout, maybe hold a team there. Maybe this is too tall of an ask. I don't know. I don't know. But I hoped for a better performance from Florida International. FIU, I know they hate being called international. Meanwhile, speaking of underperforming, there were hopes that Middle Tennessee could jump up and bite Vanderbilt. But Vandy really dominated this game. Stock still didn't play well. He took a lot of hits. More of the same from Middle Tennessee. I know you kind of see the Middle Tennessee fans looking really resigned to another season of disappointment here. I don't know what to feel like about this team. In the recent past, basically how Stockstill goes is how this team goes. Usually if Stockstill plays, they're good. And when he's injured, which he has been too often, then they're bad. But he was out there. He didn't play so well. Some of that was just kind of returning to action. 24 of 36, 178 yards. A score and an interception. Not the greatest outing for that squad. A lot of this game, what you take away from this game, depends on what you think of Vanderbilt's offense. If you think they're good, then you say, wow, Middle Tennessee really shut them down for a good portion of the game. And they were really in this thing. And some of that also depends on what you think of Vanderbilt's defense, too. They sacked Middle Tennessee 6 times. And, I mean, the score was close, but it wasn't really that close. Vanderbilt really controlled this game. They pulled away late also. Defense won this thing. Not the greatest start, but Middle Tennessee takes on UT Martin next week. That should be the balm to soothe all wounds there. I'm not the biggest believer in Middle Tennessee this season. They always have the talent. They still have a good coach. I know some people are kind of wondering maybe if he's overstayed his welcome. A lot of that will be answered this season, huh? You know, we forgot to talk about the Friday night game, Western Kentucky. I saw a tweet and it kind of made me laugh. Somebody asked, "Hey, is it me, or did Western Kentucky have a really impressive outing?" Despite losing so badly. And to that I say, no, that's bad. They did not look great. The offense still looks poor. Wisconsin is a very good team, but Wisconsin played poorly. And a lot of that was their own quarterback trying to figure out their own life there. 34-3, in playing in Wisconsin is like something like the 63-14 playing Oklahoma. Wisconsin just doesn't really have that explosive of an offense, but their defense just dominated West Kentucky throughout the game. Mike Sanford, speaking of coaches on the hot seat, he took over a team, back-to-back defending conference champions. He inherited Mike White, an NFL quarterback, and he turned that into a poor team. Or he has turned that into a poor team. Now, if you ask him, he says they're trying to get better. They're working on the offense. They really got to get that running game unstuck. Progress towards that goal, not really happening. Now, Wisconsin is a very good team, and we're not going to learn a lot seeing them take on a very good Wisconsin team with aspirations of winning the title. Maine, however, is also not going to help us learn too much about that about this Western Kentucky team either. There's a talent disparity. They got Louisville coming in. Louisville got spanked by Alabama. We really don't know what Louisville is, but Louisville can score the ball. Then you got Ball State before Marshall. I don't know that we'll know anything about Western Kentucky until the end of September when they take on Marshall. Just too many questions here, but if you're a Hilltopper fan, you want to see them keeping the quarterback upright. And I think Drew Eccles showed some things, like he moved outside of the pocket in a way that Mike White didn't. He was a little off at times. He wasn't helped out always by his receivers. If you look at his numbers, they're unimpressive, but there were some good things there. And you'd like to see him and that whole team do better, see that offense move a little bit. Because, you know, the Hilltoppers are, they have a good program, and you like to see them do well. And you know, you don't want to see one of the better teams in recent history just kind of fall into a sinkhole. So you're kind of rooting a little bit for Western Kentucky. But although I know everybody else has been getting blown out by Western Kentucky the past couple seasons, they disagree with me. UAB, hey, I almost forgot about them. They played Thursday. They blew out Savannah State. There's not too much to talk about here, as it was a very workmanlike blowout. Spencer Brown played well. Nobody really was bad. They were just a clear talent advantage all the way through. And I think they held Savannah State to something, some kind of ridiculous defensive stat that I forget right now. To be expected. It's not something that we're, you know, really impressed by, but that is what we expected from UAB. I think they're going to be a good team this year. They're the kind of team that has a chip on their shoulder all the time because of their situation. I asked Bill Clark at Conference USA Media Days whether or not, you know, they how they responded to like the thinking that maybe that everybody was taking them not taking them seriously last year, that they were just a great story but not maybe a great team. They said that may be a little bit insulting. They want to, you know, prove everybody wrong, and you get that feeling from the whole team. Erdley looks focused. And he was good in the game against Savannah State. I think everybody should be scared a little bit of UAB. They're a good team. They like to run the ball. They know what they want to do on offense. They know what they want to do on defense. And they have the talent to do it. They're not as talented as, say, like a Louisiana Tech all the way through. And maybe not as explosive as like a North Texas. But they get North Texas at home in October. So, you know, everybody should look out for UAB. Coastal Carolina next week, then Tulane, Charlotte, Louisiana Tech, Rice in Rice Stadium. Rice is going to be better. We'll talk about Rice in a second. And then North Texas, obviously, at home. That's homecoming. So UAB looked good. We didn't really learn too much about them in that game. That was a very workmanlike win, like I said. Good crowd there at Legion Field, though, Thursday night game. Let's talk some about UTEP. They lost, which is unsurprising. This is 13 straight losses for UTEP, and they lost to Northern Arizona, 30-10. I think Northern Arizona was an 8-point favorite. I hadn't looked too closely at that. I thought maybe they were going to lose against Northern Arizona, and they did, and they didn't look great. A lot of work to do. Of the two hires, I thought that UTEP had the biggest hill to climb and maybe made the worst hire. Dana Dimmel's a great guy. I'm not a believer in what he's going to do there. I am a believer. Let's move on from UTEP because there's nothing really interesting to talk about here. Rebuilding is rebuilding. There was some bright spot. Loxley looked, you know, like he can move and maybe score a little bit. But there's some shades of Charlotte last season where it's like a one-man band. I don't really know what they got going on here. Northern Arizona is a good FCS squad. So that contributed to matters. But there should be a talent advantage that I don't see happening at UTEP for a while. UNLV played okay at USC. I think UNLV is going to win that one. Then they got Tennessee, then New Mexico State, then at the Alamo Dome, they play UTSA, then North Texas. Not a whole lot of easy games there for UTEP. And we can see another winless season here. Meanwhile, Rice, they battled gamely against Houston in a game that I didn't think they were going to do well in. And this is what Major Applewhite mentioned. Some of this is due to the fact that Rice had already played the game. Around halftime, he said, hey, look, they look like a team that played six quarters, and we look like a team that has only played two. Rice jumped out to a lead. They had a 10-point lead, or is it 7-point lead, against Houston, even though Ed Oliver was dominating and stopping that run game. I suspected, based on the Prairie View A&M game, that Sean Stevenage was going to have a hard time throwing and that the run game was going to get bottled up by Ed Oliver and things were going to go roll downhill from there. Now, that was somewhat true. He didn't throw the ball well, super amazingly, but he threw the ball effectively enough. Jackson Tyner stepped in, and he threw the ball okay. But they weren't Mason Fine out there, and that ultimately doomed the Owls. That and the fact that they couldn't stop De'Aaron King in the second half when that offense got rolling. But a game effort from Mike Bloomgren's crew. And I like what's going on at Rice. I'm a believer in Bloomgren. I think that they have the right ingredients. I thought that Rice had talent last season. And the questions were maybe just that they needed a different voice in that locker room. David Bailiff has always been a coach. He's one of the best coaches in Rice history. We forget that. And he didn't leave the cupboard unstocked. I think they just needed a new voice out there. And Bloomgren is a new voice. He has talent. Isubka looked good. Walters looked good. Cephas looked dangerous out there. They had to figure out that quarterback situation. Stevenage, he threw three touchdowns, but only 200 yards passing. They needed a good complement to that run game. Rice is going to be able to run on some teams. Houston was probably one of the best defensive lines that they're going to face. I mean, there's some talent in this league, but they're going to be able to run on teams, and so they won't need to score as much as they did against this Houston team here. But I don't know. Maybe North Texas, is too much for them. But I don't know that UTEP or if Southern Miss can't deal the ball out there. They can't get Jack Abraham throwing to Quez Watkins every time. There could be an upset. I don't know that UTSA can run with them. Definitely can't score with them, not the way that they played against Arizona State. So there will be some wins in Rice in Houston there. And good things are happening. I thought they'd be pretty good by the end of the season, but it looks like they're good right now. Better than I thought they'd be. Some of that was the head start, but you take what you can get. They play Hawaii at Hawaii next week, so that's going to be tough. Cole McDonald out there is throwing touchdowns. He has 8 touchdowns already in 2 games. He's averaging 400 yards a game. If Hawaii just be able to score just like nothing, I don't know that Rice is going to be able to keep up with them. But they'll try. I mean, they already failed. Navy is a ball control running team, and they couldn't keep the ball out of Hawaii's hands either. So we'll see what's going on there. And that brings us to the final game of the night. UTSA looking terrible at Arizona State. Herm Edwards' first game in charge in Tempe. And they looked pretty solid. And some of that had to do with how terrible UTSA was. I don't know what kind of offense they imagined there at UTSA, but it's not working. And that's a simple, hot, sportsy take to throw out there, but that UTSA team looked bad. Some of that is, look, they had to figure out a quarterback competition, right? They had it figured, then they lost their guy, so they had to recompete again. Cordell Grundy started 6 of 33, I'm sorry, 187 yards and an interception that got taken back for a score. DJ Gillens, he was bad also, 3 of 10, 31 yards. That Arizona State defense looked incredible, but a lot of that was had to do with UTSA being bad. They couldn't run the ball. UTSA could not. 9 attempts, 24 yards for BJ Daniels. Jalen Rhodes, 3 carries, negative 3 yards. Where are they going to run the ball? They can't run the ball. They haven't been able to run the ball in 2 seasons now. And now without Dalton Sturm, he's gone and graduated, and there's nothing there. They can't throw the ball. He's not there to bail them out. UTSA looks terrible. And that's a concern. Frank Wilson is supposed to be one of the better coaches in this league. I've only always been a little skeptical. His competitive advantage is in recruiting. And I've seen a number of reports coming into the season saying, you know, they are, yeah, rebuilding, but a lot of the guys that are getting in are better than the guys that are leaving and graduating. So they should be really good really quick. I am a little skeptical of that. He has been able to get guys in. There's a lot of talent on that team, but they never look like they can put that talent together. And that's a concern. College football coaching is two-pronged. It's recruiting, development. Where's the development? Where's the game planning? What's happening out there? That offense looks terrible. This is supposed to be, you know, another year of development of this program. And I've seen a few beat writers make some excuses for them, basically saying, it's real hard to do that. But you can't say that when you were saying, wow, look at how great UTSA is. They're going to be one of the better G5 programs in just a few short years. It's got to be something. You got to pick something. Maybe. And I know this sounds crazy. Just 2 years after the dude was being like whispered about in SEC circles, maybe Frank Wilson is not that great of a coach. Is that crazy to say? I don't know. But let me just say that in his 3 years in charge, he has a bowl game appearance with Larry Coker's players, a missed bowl game appearance last season, even though they were eligible, with a senior quarterback who would go on to play in the NFL. Have a cup of coffee in the NFL practice squad. And started out this season with a very bad loss, even though he has quarterback issues. Now, you can say, look, he's been a little bit unlucky, but he has a lot of talent, though. He has a lot of talent on defense, and you'd think that they maybe do a better job against an Arizona State squad. I don't know how you feel, and there's a lot of hot sports opinions about UTSA. But I'm a little concerned about them. They look poor. They look really poor. And I don't see that things get a whole lot better, a whole lot more quickly. A lot of love was shown their way when they beat Baylor last season. And Baylor was, you know, like we said earlier, Baylor was a struggling program. They are back to being more of the Baylor that we expected. So if they can jump out, pick up a win this week, well, that would be much more impressive than beating that terrible Baylor team of last year. There's hope, maybe, in Kansas State, because Kansas State looked really bad. They had to escape from South Dakota 27-24 late in the game. So, hey, you know, maybe UTSA does something against Kansas State. That's the only hope, the only shining ability that I see available to them. There's kind of a weird situation with the UTSA fans. They're like nationally respected. A lot of people are like, oh, yeah, look at those Roadrunners. They're pretty good. But I think among like Conference USA fans, and this probably has to do with message board fandom, there's a lot of like sports hate. They're like, oh, they talk so much mess. I can't wait for them to lose. So it's kind of odd, the whole situation there. How much momentum do you think UTSA has before they're just kind of yet another lower division team trying to build up things? I thought they did most everything right, barring just one more bowl game or one more big victory that could have put them over the top. maybe like a South Florida back in the day or something like that. But I think these are the years where they really need to be hitting their peak. They really need to be doing that 11-0 kind of thing that they thought they were going to do last season. So maybe last year was the peak, and this year is just kind of dealing with fallout. I expected them to be worse this year, just by the nature of the cyclical nature of college football. Losing a quarterback, Frank Harris went down with an injury, so there was a dynamic quarterback that was gone. So you're kind of just stuck out in the middle of nowhere. That defense is supposed to be good, though. They still got talent. They got to play better than they did against Arizona State, but maybe Arizona State just really good. Kansas State, Texas State, UTEP, Rice coming up. If they don't figure out this offense, those are going to be tough games, even against Texas State, which is also pretty poor. That's in, it's at home. I play that in Alamo Dome. It's a little mini rivalry, one of the UTSA's oldest rivalries there. UTEP's a burgeoning rivalry, and Rice is something like a rivalry. A lot of close games, a lot of good games. UTSA has a pretty nice little schedule here. Given everything that I just said, how challenging it's going to be, Texas State, UTEP, very winnable. Rice, they're still rebuilding. That's still a very winnable game, despite what I just said earlier. Southern Miss is rebuilding. UAB is on the road. That's probably a loss. They get Florida International at home. A little revenge game there. And then, Marshall, North Texas at the end of the season. Depending on how good those teams are, those are either tough losses or, statement wins. That's what's going on there. UTSA. I'm not super excited about Frank Wilson and what's going on right now, but we'll see. Let's talk about conference leaders. This is real kind of lame right here because nobody cares after one game and nobody's played conference games. There's going to be some exaggerated things. But your leader in passing yardage, unsurprisingly, is Mason Fine. 444 yards. The next closest is the freshman Isaiah Green. Then Chris Reynolds at Charlotte, 267 yards. 272 for Isaiah Green. Three touchdowns for Mason Fine, four for Jack Abraham. A lot of new starting quarterbacks here. Mason Fine, Jamar Smith coming back, A.J. Eardley. Like I said, he had a solid outing, 22-28, a score, two touchdowns. One interception, two touchdowns. Mason Fine should have, he had like a shadow interception. One, he had an SMU guy right in the chest, but no picks for him. Chris Robeson, 15-26, 157. That's not good, guys. Passing efficiency, Jack Abraham, Chris Reynolds, Blake LaRussa. LaRussa came on for a short time, 4-4, 40 yards. But Mason Fine has the most attempts with the best passing efficiency. And he's the only one that didn't play an FCS squad. Colin Lisa, your leader in receptions, 10 catches, 93 yards, and a score. A bunch of guys tied for second and third. Your yardage leader, though, is Quez Watkins, 138 yards. He also had three scores. He's the leader there. Scoring, obviously, Quez Watkins, four touchdowns. That's going to put you over the top. Rushing, Jaquiz Dancy, 15 carries, 144 yards. 9.6 yards per carry average, two scores. He's averaging 144 yards a game. Benny LeMay out of Charlotte, he's your second guy. But Asukpa, 254 total yards. He's your total yardage leader, and he's averaging 127 a game. And he was able to run against, he had 81, and he had a 52-yarder against Houston. He's going to be good. Spencer Brown, the one game, 18 carries, 102 yards. They kept that powder dry. There's some of your leaders. Devin Singletary, he of the 1,900 yards last season, 18 carries, 69 yards, but he played by far the best competition. So there you go. That's your leaders there. Tackles. You guys want to talk about tackles? Anybody care about tackles? I'm not super excited about tackles because they're misleading. But let's talk about sacks. EJ Ejiya, two sacks for UNT, and he's your leader. Everybody else is like one right now, so not a whole lot of separating everybody. But Ejiya, he was the captain, right? He should be It's surprising that he's doing so well right now, and we'll see. Well, again, depends on how good SMU is, and we'll find that out. Lots more to find out. Just week one. Best performance of the week, probably UNT. Just dominating in that one. Second best, maybe surprising performance of the week, Rice, even though they lost. UAB is up there again, playing FCS squad. That's impressive that they just took care of business. Same with Southern Miss. We don't know too much about them. Disappointing performance of the week, definitely Old Dominion. What are you gonna say? Western Kentucky, Florida Atlantic, UTSA, probably put those all in the same bucket, even though Florida Atlantic clearly played the better team, the best team of all of them. All right, that's gonna do it for this first episode of the Conference USA Report podcast. It'll be better and more interesting next time. At least that's the plan. Thanks for listening. You can contact the podcast at podcast@cusareport.com. That's all one word, cusareport.com. You can tweet at Conference USA Report @cusareport. You can also leave a comment on one of the things there, one of the posts. There is a forum, but I think I'm gonna kill it because nobody uses forums anymore. Even though I like forums and I especially like discuss forums, but that's fine. I'm willing to recognize reality. It's there. The dudes at the towel rack were using that as their forum, but nobody wanted to use the forum because nobody uses forums anymore except olds. But that's there if you want it. Well, if there's like interest and everybody's like, dude, no, this is amazing, then I'll keep it. But I'm likely gonna kill it. But that is there. You can leave comments there. You can get at me a lot of ways. I appreciate you listening to the show. Let's do it again next time.